And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown edition for both some Bison football and some Bison basketball. So we got a lot to dig into here on this Monday night. And joining me, as always, to break down the North Dakota State Bison is Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things for you this evening?
Good. Had a football press conference today. The catering was pizza, which is always a favorite for the media, and productive overall. So it was good coming off of three Bison football / men's basketball victories. Can't complain.
All right, so let's dig right into it with that press conference that was earlier today. Seems like there's a lot of injuries to talk about, so why don't you give us the latest on the injury report there?
Yeah, long season. I think without real cupcake in the schedule at the beginning there, we've run into a situation where more and more guys are just a little bit beat up and maybe a little bit more beat up than seasons previous, and they're starting to miss guys for extended periods of time. They're also working their way towards getting a few guys back. They've been able to get a lot of victories with key guys like Brock Robbins and Bruce Anderson out that are going to come back, and then of course with Nathan Tangway and Nick DeLuca out that aren't going to come back. So it's been impressive so far this year. Frazier was a guy that missed a game the week prior. He played in the first half, ran effectively. They pulled him for the second half to keep him fresh for South Dakota. Trey Dempsey got replaced by Eric Bachmeyer with, I think it looked, to me, it looked a lot like a stinger. That's another precautionary thing. I think if that were a playoff game, Trey probably would have been right back in there. I have a little bit less confidence about Caleb Butler being able to participate in Saturday's game against South Dakota, but I have very little long-term concern about him. He's a very important guy as someone who can play a little bit of strong side end and a little bit of defensive tackle, especially where the defensive tackle position is a little bit thin. And then this was something that Kleiman didn't mention, but I've just kind of heard through the grapevine that potentially Jeff Ilias is dealing with an ankle and may or may not be able to play against South Dakota, which would be a big loss for a Bison passing attack that isn't quite where it was hoping to be, I think, at this point in the season.
So I know that we also have to talk about Ross's favorite all-time player in Bison football history, Mr. Bruce Anderson. And I think I heard from the Twitter sphere today, Ross, that Bruce may be back?
Yeah, he's been cleared to practice. We mentioned this a little bit in the preview for this upcoming or this past game against Indiana State, that it's just a question of whether or not you want to play the kid, because you have, I think, with the victory over Indiana State, you have clinched the bye. Even if they go down to USD and lose, it's still a two-loss team with an FBS win, and that's going to be good enough to get into those top eight seeds. So they're not going to play on Thanksgiving weekend, and then the guys are going to get one extra week to heal. So do you play Bruce Anderson in a game against USD that you should probably win, or do you give him 14 more days to get that ankle ready and then have a greater level of confidence that you'd have him for, you know, for that playoff run? Now, if you feel like this is a player that you need to get one or two kick returns and 10 or 12 offensive snaps just to shake the rust off, fine, you know, that'd be sort of the hedging of the better or going halfway there. But I would say that if he practices all week, it's going to be hard for them to not let him play.
All right, so let's talk a little special teams, specifically your guy Darius Shepherd. He had one of the most electrifying punt returns I've seen it this year and just in a long time in general. And because of that, he's rewarded as the special teams player of the week. Do you think that's justified?
Oh, for sure, and it's just part of the news and what we like to inform the people over these Player of the Week awards. I think Shep you know, is not just a punt returner. He's on a lot of the special teams units, but that specific return was pretty awesome, and it was something that was recognized by the Valley media and coaches, and that's how, you know, he ended up as special teams player of the week. And what I think highlights one of the better performances of the season by the special teams as a whole, and I think that's something, you know, that we'll probably touch on a little bit later on in the show.
All right, so let's transition to the basketball side of things. We have to start with A.J. Jacobson. He was able to play in both games. He misses, I believe, 3 shots from the field in those 2 games coming off injury. I mean, was that something you're expecting, and how healthy do you think A.J. is now?
Well, if I was him, I'd never take the tape off of that left hand. He's really shooting the ball at a high level, and these were not just layups against weak opponents. He shot the ball well from 3, shot the ball well on contested runs to the rim. Not a whole lot of work in the post, but that's not really AJ's game. If he's scoring inside, they're generally on runs to the rim. So I was impressed for a kid that should have been a little bit rusty to come in and play that efficiently. And he was a big part of beating a mid-major Arkansas State team at home to open up the Shack. That would have been kind of a heck of a deal to drop that opening game, no question about it.
So you talked about it a little bit right there, the opening of the Shack for real. I mean, the first regular season game, how was the atmosphere, and how would you describe it to someone who still hasn't been there yet to go see a basketball game?
It was really cool. I think people really appreciated it. There are always complaints, you know, with anything, but I think the 2 big downfalls were they tried to do the stunt card thing like you sometimes see at Lambeau Field where people are holding up cards and there's a logo. There weren't quite enough people there or enough people participating to get it to work. I think it was supposed to be Bison logos in the 2 baselines, and then between, you know, down the sideline was supposed to be like welcome to the Shields Center. It kind of went over like a lead balloon, and then a lot of people are not super pleased with the leg room. The bleachers appear all like they're almost not pulled out all the way. There's a lot of room in between the sideline and the sideline and the bleachers. Hopefully it's something that they can get fixed, but taller patrons are a little bit displeased. Other than that, though, everybody was really excited. I think the video board is a nice touch. The sound system in there is spectacular. It even had to overpower a fire alarm at Sunday's game during the pregame, so they had it way up loud and then were able to turn it back down. But I think that the reception for the new building was overwhelmingly positive with a few complaints. I think it's just going to be a great place to watch mid-major basketball for years to come, and I think it's really going to be a special place when teams like South Dakota State and North Dakota are in there.
So speaking of special things, we have to talk about the brand, which is hashtag Peace Move Mr. Paul Miller. Opening game, he goes off for 24 points, and in the second game, he goes off for 18. How is Paul Miller looking? I mean, the last time we talked about him was at the end of the season last year when he was dealing with injury. Looks like he's 100% now, and he's performing at a higher clip than even last season.
Yeah, very, very efficient. Was able to show that wrinkle to his game that he and I talked about in the preseason. I asked him, you know, what have you worked on this season to get better? And he said, well, nothing really, except I've focused on getting stronger and being able to finish at the rim. A player that was athletic enough to get to the rim, but not always able to finish through contact. And he had at least 3 3-point play opportunities against Arkansas State. He had at least 1 against Minnesota Morris that I remember. Just a player that has improved his ability to get to the rack tremendously. He's already one of the most accurate 3-point shooters in the history of the school. But when that shot's not falling, he can get to the rim and do it at a really high level. When that shot does start to fall, he's going to become almost unguardable, especially for Summit League wings. And I think it's really going to be a competitive problem for the other teams in the league. He looked really good last season. His attitude appears to be right where it needs to be. And from an athletic standpoint, I see absolutely no lingering effects of any sort of knee injury, that's for sure.
And surprise, surprise, you've talked about it at length on this podcast. When the going gets tough here early in the first game, you see all the starters play at least 27 minutes, and then the only other guy to play in double digits is Tyson Ward. I'm guessing you're not shocked at all for me to ask you, are you surprised that Richmond shortened his bench in a close game?
No, and I think, you know, Tyson played because Tyson is just so damn athletic and so long that he's already one of the better defenders on the team. I don't know how much of a license to shoot the ball he had in that game against Arkansas State. Of course, the developmental game against Minnesota Morris was a different thing, but it didn't take long for the hook to come for Spencer Eliason after a quick turnover. It didn't take long for the hook to come for Dangu, really, in that game either. Just those first game jitters, a little bit of tentativeness. Richmond knew that he wanted to get that opening game against a mid-major opponent, and he relied on he danced with the girl that brung him, because those are the players that he's relied on for the last two seasons, and those were the guys that got minutes on Friday when it mattered. So it'll be interesting to see that trust develop between Richmond and the younger players as the season rolls on.
Are you surprised at all that it was Carlin Dupree that got the nod in terms of the starting lineup and not Dangu?
Well, in the sense that we got game previews handed to us and emailed to us that had the starters as Kai, Paul, AJ, Deng, and Dexter. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that even if he wasn't going to play a ton of minutes, he would have been in the starting lineup just from a size standpoint. And I mean, you look at last season, they very habitually started a freshman in Dylan Miller that I think averaged 9.5 minutes a game. So it's sort of how Dave wants to set up his rotation that has more to do with the flow of the game than the actual starters on paper. So I had no difficulty at all believing that Deng was going to be a starter. I wrote that the starting lineup that we were given, that was my prediction going into the season. And then I felt potentially that the size of Arkansas State and the way that they wanted to play, they're a pretty short team. They're a pretty athletic team. It made sense for Richmond to go with that true three-guard lineup. But then he stuck with the same lineup against Minnesota Morris. That was a shorter team just on account of being NCAA Division III. They weren't necessarily, you know, the press type of team that Arkansas State is. They're just D3. But he stuck with the same lineup. So it'll be interesting to see if we ever do get that starting lineup that we were given on paper and that I predicted, or if he's just going to stick with these three kids that were honestly all recruited as point guards and don't give the Bison a tremendous amount of length on the perimeter, but realistically they kind of switch everything anyway and really play team defense. So it'll be interesting to see if Dave can get away with it from a rebounding perspective.
And you also made some predictions on terms of red shirts. Looks like you went 2 for 2 there as both Tyson Ward and Jared Samuelson get some tick in both games. Again, I'm going to guess you are not surprised.
No, I just looked at the makeup of the team and kind of what they were needing. They needed a backup wing after Lameek Commence went out for the season. They got that in Tyson Ward. I think Keep is probably already their most talented defender on the wing. Although AJ Jacobson, I have to mention, has really been good defensively, whether it's guarding out on the wing or protecting the rim, which is not something that you would ever have expected from AJ. It would be rim protection. But Ward, I think, was definitely going to be part of what they did this season. And then Samuelson provides shooting, and you can really see that with his release. A guy who understands his role, a guy who is going to be called upon to play 8-9 minutes a game and knock down a three or two in a big spot. And that's what Jared Samuelson's going to be. I think, you know, with his walk-on status as well, it's easier to not think that you're really giving up on a scholarship or telling, you know, taking a scholarship kid that you could have redshirted and preserved. He's almost like a found money, Jared Samuelson is. So those two, not surprising at all. What they have, though, in Carlin Dupree and in Paul Miller and in Kai Cabellis are athletic point guard types that can defend and run, and they don't need another one of those, at least for this season, in Cameron Hunter. So he is hidden all the way at the end of the bench in his warm-up, and I would anticipate he will not play until his redshirt freshman season next year.
How do you anticipate this big rotation working out? Because, again, with the limited amount of minutes, you only saw guys like Dengu and Spencer Eliason combined for 10 total minutes against Arkansas. How do you think that rest of the bench rotation is going to work itself out?
Well, I think right now, Deng is really, until they switched around, Deng is really AJ's backup and going to play that stretch four position. We'll probably, unless and until he makes his way into the starting lineup, will probably come in and out for AJ. And so your bigs are really in a one-on-one battle with Dylan Miller and Spencer Eliason to come in when Dexter Werner comes out. Spencer Eliason has been that player in the first two games. I just feel that maybe Dylan Miller took that demotion to heart. I still feel like watching the two kids play, at least on the offensive end, which is so much easier to sort of observe and grade out for an amateur like myself, I think Dylan Miller is still the better player, and I would not be surprised to see him be that big moving forward. I think that you're going to have Dave have a hard time playing 10 guys all season long in competitive games. I think that your four bench guys, if you call these five starters the five starters for the rest of the season, are a very limited role for Samuelson that he keeps all year long, almost no matter what. Deng's going to have a role, and Ward is going to have a big role, and then it's going to be between Miller and Eliason. At some point, either Miller or Eliason, I think, is going to get buried on the end of that bench, and Dave's just going to go with nine. But it just remains to be seen who he ultimately decides and who he goes with.
My only question for you on this Minnesota-Morris game, NDSU ends up winning by 30, but it sounds like the head coach wasn't too happy about it. Why wasn't he so happy? And, I mean, are there any other takeaways from a game against a D3 opponent?
No, I just think that Richmond was upset, and rightfully so. This was a team playing against a Division III school that was lacking some leadership, lacking some fire, was really going through the motions, at least from the coach's perspective. I mean, it was a Sunday afternoon game. It was 5 o'clock. You could just almost even tell by the way that the fans and the media were dressed, weren't convinced that anybody actually wanted to be there, and the team sort of played like that, and Dave had no time for that attitude and called an early timeout. And was really, really animated in a game that his team was almost certainly going to come out on top. So just interesting to watch, to pay attention to, and honestly to respect the coaching staff for keeping their eye kind of on the mission and not just on getting out of this D3 counter game.
All right, so let's switch back to football here, and let's talk a little bit about our pro Bison. We have to start with Carson Wentz. His Eagles were able to take care of a very good Atlanta Falcons team. How did Carson play, and did C.J. Smith end up getting in the game at all?
No recorded statistics for C.J. I haven't gone back and watched that game. We had the Vikings and Packers on the screen for some reason. That'll probably change as the season goes on. But they were able to get a win. That was a big win, certainly for the Eagles in the NFC playoff race. No question about that. Atlanta's a team that they're going to be fighting with for seeding. So to have that head-to-head tiebreaker is a big deal. And Carson Wentz played really good in a matchup with another really good quarterback in Matt Ryan.
I believe the Chargers didn't have the greatest of days, but I did see Mr. Kyle Emanuel in there. And then the other pride of Fargo and Joe Haig. I don't believe the Colts played this weekend, but feel free to correct me if I was wrong.
No, you're right. Haig, just to mention, you know, playing that inside linebacker role again, fun to watch him play that. Those inside linebacker guys get in on more plays, really, than the edge guys do. They're sort of there to contain in that defense. The inside linebackers get to run around a little bit more. You see 51 flash on your screen a little bit more when he's playing inside linebacker. So that was certainly something to pay attention to. And then Joe Haig was back in town, actually came to the basketball game, signed with brief Chicago Bears punter Ben LeCompte, but was there with a couple of friends and was not recognized at the basketball game, but then was down on the field for the football game on the Indianapolis Colts bye week and did talk to the media a little bit. I believe was interviewed on the TV broadcast. I noticed when I was doing the breakdown of that game for the Bison Report. So it was nice to have Joe back and nice to see that he certainly hasn't forgotten his Fargo roots. Ryan, there were a lot of Bison football recruits at that final game. What can you tell us in recruiting time with Ryan Burns?
Well, the three guys I really want to talk about is an official visitor from about 8 days ago now in Ravonte Holt. I was finally able to connect with him, which took far too long, but with the lack of defensive tackles on the NDSU roster right now, Ravonte is a kid that becomes so much more important just because he can come in and provide immediate depth at 6'4", 260 pounds. From talking with him, he's very high on North Dakota State. He's from Sacramento, and that is the only issue, is that distance, maybe playing a little bit of a part there. So we'll have to see come January, as that's when he wants to make his final decision, how big of a part it does play. He does have an official visit set with Wyoming, so the Fighting Craig Bowls there, for the second weekend in December, so he's not anywhere near close to making a decision, but he did want it known that North Dakota State is on top for his services. A couple of visitors to note from this past weekend are Antoine Sims, a running back from Florida. I'm just starting to get into talking with him, as he was pretty tired after getting home from his North Dakota State visit last night. So we're just getting into starting talking with him, but again, for early impressions, he has no intentions of deciding here anytime soon. He wants to get into December and January and take more official visits, so I don't anticipate that being a commitment coming soon as well. And then there's another name by the name of Shea Wyatt, a kid from Nebraska. He's got a South Dakota State offer, and he also has a couple of basketball offers. I believe they're NAIA and D2 schools, but he came up and visited. He is a wide receiver. He's from the Nebraska area, and he does have a South Dakota State offer. NDSU is still deciding with what they want to do with him. There has been no preferred walk-on or official scholarship offer extended at this time, but it is worth noting that he came up on a visit. So let's get into this Indiana State breakdown. So this game wasn't very competitive, and again, we're going to get into some statistical things that don't really make a lot of sense. They're pretty much anomalies. But, Ross, you were there. This game was pretty much a blowout from the moment they kicked off.
Yeah, I made kind of a remark to Kleiman at the press conference that I wanted to know how big of an effect hits like Pierre Tucker's hit on that crossing pattern there have on a football team, because in the stat book it's just, you know, pass completed, gain of 5 yards. It's actually a pretty neutral play from a strategy perspective, if not a slight win for the offense. But the way that the hit affected the game, the next play was a huge sack, and that was it. I mean, it was 17-0 at that point. The sack after that hit caused Indiana State to be in terrible field position. NDSU took over at the 47. Easton Stick scores a rushing touchdown. It's 24-0, and there isn't any way in the world that Indiana State was going to be able to score 25 points in that game. It was over, and it was over in the first quarter. So it was kind of tough, I think, to maintain focus, and that game got a little chippy. There's no question about that at all.
So you talked about Pierre G. Tucker. Just for fans who don't know the statistical side of things, 12 total tackles, which leads the team, 2 tackles for loss, which leads the team. He also had a sack, a pass breakup, and another quarterback hit. he was everywhere. I mean, he was legitimately everywhere on Saturday, and he played a huge part in this Bison defense.
Such a good player. And if it seems like if we're not talking about MJ Stumpf, we're talking about Pierre G. Tucker, a guy I think, in my mind at least, with the start type of splash plays that he's able to create, has got to be thinking about Sundays. Coming into the season, I wasn't thinking about PGT in reference to Sundays, but I am now. I think at the very least he's going to be a priority free agent after the draft. I fully expect him to participate in the pro day, hopefully get invited to maybe a lesser all-star game, certainly not a senior bowl, a senior bowl hopeful, or maybe not even a Shrine game hopeful, but a guy I think that could potentially be a next level player. If we're not talking about him on this podcast, it seems like we're talking about MJ. Those two are, in my opinion, the best outside linebacker combination of the Division I era. It's not Joe Mays and Mike Marish. It's probably not even Carlton Littlejohn and Travis Beck. I think these two do everything those guys do, but are bigger players and more impactful players. And I mean that just physically. These guys are able to do all the things that those guys were able to do at 6'2", 230, instead of being undersized players. And I really have been impressed with them all season long. That hit was not the first of its kind as far as PGT season has gone. He's been very violent all year long, done a really good job of delivering hits like that without being penalized, which is extremely important, and making splash plays as well. Turnover-producing plays, sacks, tackles for loss, not just doing his assignment, because I really felt like last season he and Stumpf were very assignment-sure players that weren't doing a whole lot in the realm of difference-making plays.
So let's talk a little bit more about Darius Shepherd. We talked about him to open the show with that 84-yard electric punt return, which once again, if you don't, you should go back and watch it. It's on the NDSU football Twitter feed. Makes many a man miss and all en route for the touchdown there, and then four receptions for 40 yards, which leads the Bison receivers. He had a heck of a day, and he's a really good player.
Yeah, I keep saying, you know, if Shepherd got the Wenicke treatment or the Cup treatment, that maybe he couldn't be quite that kind of player, but I really think he could be an all-conference level guy. I think he's super talented. I think he's open a lot. I think that even if they ran a little bit more for him in the running game, but there are only so many plays in these weird blowouts with defensive and special teams touchdowns that none of these guys are really getting touches, so it's hard to complain about anybody. But Darius, I just was really impressed with him this week. I think he was probably the offensive MVP. If you include his punt return as offense, which you maybe can't do, but I just thought that of the guys that impacted this game during the competitive phase, he was number one. And I just wanted to kind of sing his praises because I think he's maybe a little bit of an underrated player on this year's squad.
And Robert Tanyan was someone we talked about coming into this game. He was their leading receiver, and this Bison secondary holds him to three catches for 18 yards. How impressed with the secondary were you in shutting down the Sycamore leading receiver?
Yeah, he was a guy that you had mentioned after their game with Minnesota, and it was a guy that I anticipated being followed by Jalen Allison just because he was a clear number one receiver, something they hadn't seen in a few weeks since that big run of number one wide receivers, and I was impressed with the way that they were able to take him away. I think he had a lower body injury at some point in the game that also limited his effectiveness. He came up from one catch a little bit gimpy, but very impressive, I thought, from a pass defense perspective.
It's not every day you see a team getting blown out, and then you look at the box score and you see they only passed for 90 yards on the day. 14 of 27 for Aaron Young, 90 total yards in the passing game. Again, this is just a weird statistical anomaly type of game, but have you ever seen something like that before?
No, I mean, you know, you turn on talk or sports radio today and it's all this talk about how, you know, irrelevant the 375 yards passing Aaron Rodgers had yesterday because Green Bay got blown out. And so you would assume, you know, in a game where Indiana State was basically non-competitive with 8 minutes left in the first quarter, well, they must have tossed it all over the yard because there was basically no consequence. NDSU probably dialed it back to vanilla defense, yada, yada, yada. Well, there was no yada, yada, yada. There was 90 yards passing. And I got to tell you, this pass defense, specifically the five defensive backs, are almost unrecognizable. And I'll even throw Quentin McCoy in there because he got some reps in that game and I think is really turning into a player that has a really nice role as a potential dime back, though the Bison really do prefer to play nickel in almost any situation. I am impressed with Quentin McCoy. That goes down, of course, to the two Jalens. Dom Davis, I think, has come miles this season, and I've been really impressed. That was a kid that we were wondering about early on in the season because of all the hype he got on scout team last year, because of his recruiting status, and a guy we weren't hearing about early. All of a sudden, bang, he's the starting nickelback and getting plenty of snaps and replacing Matt Plank in that package. And Robbie Grimsley and Trey Dempsey continue to be very, very good pass defending safeties. I've often said people that complain about Robbie's tackling that the Bison really are starting two free safeties, and you can tell that in their pass defense because that is both of their specialty, and they are able to do a number of things. They feel comfortable with both Trey and Robbie in man coverage, which allows the defense to do a lot of blitzes with cover zero and cover one. Now that Nate Tangway is not available and doesn't really and the current defensive tackles don't really provide a lot of pass rush. You saw plenty of blitzes. You saw a cat blitz from Jalen Allison. You saw a twist blitz from Greg Menard and MJ Stumpf. And then you just saw regular old blitzes by both MJ and Pierre during this game. The blitz package is going to become more of what this team has to do without Nathan Tangway providing an interior pass rush. And the defensive backs coming into their own this late in the season is going to have a big part of making that possible.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Bison special teams, and this may have been their best game as a unit all season. Cam hits both of his field goals from 45 and 29. Kickoffs were good as their coverage units only allowed 21 yards at the long and the kickoff returns. And obviously, Jackson Coons may be setting a record for the number of fair catches in a season. What did you think about the Bison special teams as a whole on Saturday?
Really impressed by their coverage units. I think that was the number one thing. Of course, the punt return breaks the game open. I talked about the game ending on the Pierre G. Tucker sack. It probably ended as soon as Darius Shepard broke loose and had that convoy of Bison all the way into the end zone. But I just think that was an area that concerned Kleiman. He made some wholesale personnel changes on the kickoff return team. I respect him for doing that so deep into such an important season, and it paid off. I think that they had tremendous coverage. Jake Brinkman, Jackson Brown, guys that I think specifically deserve a lot of credit for that. Jake Brinkman is a guy that one of those new additions to the aforementioned coverage team, and they just do a really good job. They've gotten to the point now where they just don't care about the length of Jackson Kuntz's punts. As long as it goes 35 yards and it's fair caught, they're happy with those 35 yards of field position, because with him kicking the ball the way that he does, there basically is no threat of an explosive return from the other team. Even in a three and out situation where you gain 5 yards and punt the ball, the other team is starting, you know, on the opposite 30-yard line, and it's something that really isn't bothering this NDSU defense in the least. So something, I guess, that the coaching staff has just learned to live with, and that the fan base should probably learn to live with, because it looks like that's going to be the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. Cam Peterson, you mentioned, just fantastic. He's really turned into a good kicker, a guy that people were very concerned about during parts of last season, during his freshman year. I think that position is completely solidified for the next two seasons after this. I am very, very comfortable with Cam moving forward.
So let's talk about that strange time of possession. Again, to give folks a reference here, NDSU's up 41-7 heading into the fourth quarter. And you look at the time of possession on the day, Indiana State held the ball for 11 more minutes than NDSU. They held the ball for 35 minutes, and NDSU only holds it for 24. NDSU doesn't have a drive on the day over 4 minutes. I don't think I've seen anything like that, considering NDSU's up 34 points, and yet they don't have a drive over 4 minutes, and they were still able to put up 41 points. Just a strange thing, Ross.
Yeah, and it's a theme from the entire season. It keeps happening. This isn't a one-game deal. Just very weird. I mean, this is a program that has defined itself on its ability to get stops, limit the other team's total plays run, and then destroy the opposition in time of possession based on their ability to control the clock by running the football and converting on third downs. And it's not that they can't run the football. Look at their yardage totals on the ground from the last 2 weeks. It's this: they keep getting these defensive plays and these special teams plays. They end up with short fields, and they're not getting off the field on third down quite like they have historically. So it's just so weird. Like you said, it's just weird to watch this Bison team win these games convincingly when the outlying statistics suggest that maybe that's not how it should be going.
So let's talk a little bit about Easton Stick. Again, not the greatest day passing, 7 for 13, 65 total yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions through the air. But it's like Indiana State forgot to watch the game from last year, as Easton's able to get 85 yards on 4 carries, and 2 of them are for touchdowns. Easton Stick goes back to his legs, and he has a lot of success doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can potentially blame it on not being the same coaching staff from last year, but you would assume that that coaching staff would watch last year's game on account of NDSU literally not losing a single person off of their staff and probably going to run the same stuff that they've ran for the last 5 national championship teams. But it was a complete repeat of what happened a season ago in a much more competitive game. But Easton Stick missed the one big throw that Polisek gave him. He had RJ on a really deep post down the middle for a touchdown and let it hang on him a little bit. The defender was able to catch up. But he had a really good play action fake, completely froze the safety, and they didn't give him another bomb to throw. So he was able to be somewhat efficient in the rest of his passing game. Did not turn the football over, but just dominated on the ground. Such an electric athlete. You talk to some of the guys, even some of the freshmen, and they'll tell you that Stick is one of the best 5 or 6 athletes on the team, which is really impressive because it's not like these are some stiffs. This is a team that beat a Big Ten opponent who, by the way, just beat Michigan. And to say that about him is high praise, and it continues to show when his passing game isn't working, they're going to win based on what he does with his legs. And they've won all 8 games he played a season ago, and they're 9-1 this season. 17-1 is not a bad record.
Let's talk about that offensive line. 6.9 yards per carry for these Bison running backs, 4 rushing touchdowns on 35 attempts. What did you think about the big boys up front?
Really an offensive line that's coming into its own. I don't know if they're getting healthier, if they're being a little bit smarter about how often they're pulling plankers or what's going on. But this is a team that had struggled to put teams away in the fourth quarter because they weren't able to convert third downs on the ground. That's not happening anymore. Part of that, I think, has to do with maybe a little bit of pulling up on who they're playing, a little bit of strength of schedule. But at the same time, this is a really, really good rushing attack at this point, and I think that they're really coming into their own. One position specifically, Colin Connor at left tackle, and they're working little Zach Johnson in there as well. But Colin Connor is getting more and more comfortable as the season goes on, and I think he's really going to be a good player. I specifically just want, and I said this in the film breakdown, but maybe not everybody that's listening to this has read that. What an awesome play by Colin Connor on that second Easton Stick rushing touchdown. The play is Lance Dunn offset to Stick's right. They fake the read option left. So what Connor's responsibility is to block down or step to his right so that they can option the defensive end. Stick keeps. He has to continue to run that counter, run that fake out. And then when Stick gets even with him, he's about 20 yards away. And Connor, without anybody to block, sprints down to the pylon and just levels a defensive back 45 yards away from the original line of scrimmage so that Stick is assured to score a touchdown. It was an unbelievable hustle play, showed tremendous athleticism and really just desire from a guy who's that big. I mean, most offensive linemen are not going to want to get up and run around that much. So I was just really impressed with Colin Connor's play, but specifically on that second Easton Stick touchdown run, I wanted to make mention of that.
All right, so what do you have coming up for content here the rest of the week as we wrap up this breakdown edition?
Oh, we got fantastic stuff. I'm going to restart the basketball roundup where, if you guys remember last season, we don't do individual game recaps. There are plenty of places to get that, but we will talk about some observations. It's pretty, I would say, a little bit similar in style, certainly to the film breakdowns where I just talk about things that I'm noticing and maybe some things that I'm getting from within the program and try to keep you guys as up to date on what's going on with men's hoops as I can. Little recaps of the games that have happened upon publishing, little recaps of the games that will happen between publishing. So little previews that'll come back this week. I requested to talk to Brad Ambrosius and Greg Menard. I would anticipate that those requests will be fulfilled. The sports information staff has been tremendously generous with me all season long. We'll do the South Dakota preview pod, and then I will, of course, drop that South Dakota preview piece either on Friday afternoon or Saturday morning.
Sounds good, and I'll have your Know Your Enemy piece with, I believe, Mick Gary from the Argus Leader, and I should also have this Antoine Sims interview up in the next 48 hours as well. So there's a lot of good things coming to the Bison Report. You've heard it before. You're going to hear it again. We are partnered with Sports Illustrated as well. If you want to purchase an annual subscription, $44.95 a year to read all this goodness from Ross and myself, you also get a year's worth of Sports Illustrated for free delivered to wherever you are in the world. So that's going to wrap things up for this edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am Ryan Burns, joined by Ross Uglum, and we thank you guys for listening. Go Bison.